This is Brian, just letting you know that we had some fairly substantial technical opportunities during the recording of this podcast, but most of it was resolved, and hopefully you won't notice a thing different.
This is How Was Your Weekend with Wendy and Brian. Look for updates at facebook.com/weekendpodcast or HOWW.AS/yourweekend. While you're there, please subscribe. There are links for iTunes, Android, and more. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Wendy. How was your weekend?
Good. How was yours?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, pretty good. Hey, go ahead.
Oh, no.
No,
you go.
Ahead, you go.
Are you going to introduce that we have an exciting guest?
Not
or
yet.
What? Oh, okay.
Yes,
I didn't know where you were going with this.
I'm not going there.
What were you going to say? Just say it.
I wanted to just mention something.
Okay.
Because this episode is going to be about changing careers. And we have an extra special guest star.
Oh!
To help us with that.
There we go.
But which I will announce in a second. But changing careers, in this case for you, is going to mean moving.
Correct. Yes. I will be officially finalizing whatever you want to call it, the details of a new job soon that will take me to Nashville, Tennessee.
So we're still going to be doing the podcast.
Yes, we are.
We're going to try to record episodes in bulk.
Correct. And then Skype if we need to.
Skype if we need to.
Yeah.
So what that means is, to be completely honest and transparent with our listeners, we may not be able to talk about what we did this past weekend.
But I will be coming back to North Carolina because it's not that far. So there will be things. But
yeah, but the show, we're still going to cover the same kind of stuff that we do. But the format's going to change a little.
Yes, sir.
Just slightly.
You're correct.
So, well, you know, I think it'll open up what we talk about.
I think it'll be interesting. We'll be living in two different cities talking about the same topic with, now we can't even say, hey, remember that time?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dang.
This will be different and weird.
No, tough. All right.
So I'm not going to say anything because I was going to segue into introducing Heather, but I just said different and weird and I don't want to do that. Because that would be terrible of me.
Oh, please.
So now that there's enough time between that awkward statement,
that's not referencing Heather, not at all.
I invented awkward and weird.
Yes.
So we have Heather Clausen here. Hey, Heather, how's it going?
It is going awkward and weird. How about you?
So Wendy and I worked with Heather. She's a friend of ours, but we worked with her. What, you left the company? What, 2 years ago?
No, almost 4 years ago.
You're kidding me.
No, it's been that long.
It has been that long.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But we all worked together 4 years ago.
We worked and had fun.
And had fun.
Yep.
Oh, the fun that was had.
Oh, the fun that was had. So originally we were going to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming and have a review, but Wendy wasn't able to make it.
Wendy's a slacker and didn't go. Boo. But so these two can do it sometime.
Yeah, but we've been talking about like changing jobs and careers because I want to be topical, and that's something of interest to people. It's kind of interest to me at this point. Not that I'm specifically looking, but I've been in my current role now 4 years. And at some point in the future, I would like to do something different.
So yeah, whether it's changing within the same company or any of the changes we've had throughout our
exactly
many working years.
And these ladies have experience with that where I don't. So I thought that would be a
you
good conversation.
You have one change you can share with us, right?
Do I?
Yeah. You changed roles, or you left the company for a little bit and came back, right?
Oh, yeah, I did that.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was that your Mexican wrestling career?
I would love to have a Mexican wrestling career.
Macho Libre. Wait, oh. What is that? Was
Nacho
that what it was
Libre.
Called? Oh, Nacho. Not Macho. Yep. Yep, there we go. And I just got an ugly look from Brian, even though I can't see his face.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking about nachos. So
I love nachos.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, so, okay, so changing careers. People change careers for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes they don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Wendy, that's what happened to you.
Yep.
Sometimes, like, in the last time that I changed roles, the last time Heather changed roles, we just decided that we wanted to do something different.
Yeah.
So, it's perfectly normal.
To want to do something different.
To want to do something different.
Yeah. And I think it's becoming more normal and something that is, I guess, more accepted and expected than it used to be. I think we all grew up in an era where our parents, you know, were loyal and committed to a company for years and years and years, and the workforce dynamics have changed and things like that. So we probably learned that from them. But as we've evolved through our careers, it's becoming less and less a thing for people to stay at the same company for 30 plus years. Not that it doesn't exist, but it's less and less, I think.
Not company, but role.
Type of business.
The longest that you've ever spent in one role? Heather, you go first.
Yeah, Heather, go.
Oh, let's see. The longest in one role is probably I was the office manager for a management corporation that managed retirement homes when I lived in Southern California. And I did that role for 8 years.
Okay. That's a pretty good long time.
Yeah.
I think mine was like 3 years is the longest I stayed in one position.
So I'm going to have to give two answers for mine because...
Wait, how can you have two answers? One's longer or not?
Because I worked two jobs at the same time.
Because Nacho Libre was a hobby.
Yeah, that's right.
The first job I ever had was working in radio.
Okay.
At WWWC in Wilkes County.
Okay.
And I was the Sunday disc jockey there for 16 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. But that was a 1 day a week commitment. It was more than that, really. But because I did other things. But I did that for 16 years. Same role. Basically, same function for the entire time.
All right.
In my primary day job, the longest that I've ever been in one role, one continuous role without being promoted or changing job functions, was probably about 3 years.
Okay. So we're about tied for that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in roles where I was promoted to like another level of the role, did similar work, or like manager level where I managed people doing the same work, but like specifically the one role, just 3 years.
But don't you think that sort of raises an interesting question? The question being, how do you define a career versus a job? Because I will tell you right now, definition has changed over the last few years. And my generation was a generation that was a career was something that you had to go to school for. You had to get a certification. It was a lawyer, a doctor, an architect, you know, a landscape artist, whatever.
We were architects.
Whatever, you know, whatever it was. But you had to go to school to learn it. And that was literally a career. Anything else was just a job. But then you kind of get into that area where, for example, nobody goes to school to learn how to be a process analyst. You don't go to school for that. You get a business degree and then you go work for a company who says, hey, we need to do things better than we do it. And then boom, you're a process analyst, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of what happened to us.
And so it...
Except for the business degree part.
Hey, 2 years in clown college.
Hey, I'm animal science. Yep. Listen, mine's so irrelevant to what I do now.
The interesting thing is I literally had a conversation with a friend of ours this afternoon. We were out drinking wine, so
nice.
I will edit the conversation appropriately and leave out all the dirty jokes. But the conversation was, what do you consider to be a career? And her answer was, a career is something that you do even when you're not in the office, whereas a job is a 9-to-5. When you're done, you're done. You go home, you don't worry about it anymore. Whereas a career to her is something where you might get called at night because something happened. You might have to go in really early because something happened. You need to be available outside of what you would consider normal working hours. So I thought that was kind of an interesting take on it as well.
That is. So a friend of mine recently was faced with an option. It was either to stay and take a demotion or leave. And that friend looked back at their 13 or 14 years and realized at the company and realized that they didn't have a career. They had a series of semi-related positions, but nothing that they could really hang their hat on other than just bullets on a resume.
Really?
And I think in a way, that was eye-opening, and also it probably, I'm projecting here, if it were me, it would have bothered me.
Yeah.
And honestly, looking at my resume, it's really the same way. I have one role sort of leads to the next, but if you look back from what I started, which was a rep on the phone,
yep,
to what I do now, completely unrelated.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I've always viewed positions as important, I guess. I almost view it as like a mission, just like working at the company and trying to help realize the company's vision. And I've worked late. I've been on call. I've done all that stuff. But that was not for me necessarily. It was for the company.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think we found recently, a lot of us, that that wasn't necessarily always the right path to take.
Yeah. I think there's a, I think you have to find a healthy balance, because I do think your level of commitment and your ability to put in the extra time is important. But I think some of us become so, and it depends on the environment, right? Like some people do it and the company environment doesn't require it. They just love what they do, or they are so committed to their company, that's what they do. Where other people, you find that they do that simply out of fear for losing their job or being viewed as not competent if they don't go above and beyond. But I think everybody has to find that healthy balance of you've got to step away at some point. Otherwise, you become consumed and you're really not as effective in your role, I think, when you are obsessed with it or you're constantly on it all the time. And I think people like that, I think, you know, again, I think the company drives a lot of whether people behave that way or not.
So I
like, self-motivation, right? I'm mm-hmm. I'm people would call me a workaholic, but that's just how
I call
I am.
You an alcoholic.
No, no, Brian Kilby, don't spread lies about me.
So I like where you're going. So I guess there are certain people, I think anybody, like when my wife has talked about going for other jobs, she's always spoke in terms of fear
mm-hmm.
that either she isn't good enough, doesn't know enough, the other candidates are better. So I mean, like, so what other kind of fears would you have in trying to actually wanting to go ahead and change careers?
I think, Heather, like, tell us what finally made you. You were with the company how long before you were like, you know what, I'm gonna do something different?
She worked for you, so, I think is what it was.
I know. I broke her. God, I broke
no,
Heather.
I cried when I left Wendy. I was in the bathroom and it was terrible. And then I realized I was in the men's room and then it was just weird and awkward. We're back to the weird and awkward. But anyways, in 10 years, I had 6 different jobs there. The only job that I willingly made a change from and to was when I first started, I was an administrative assistant for a VP. And I told myself I would give myself maybe 2 or 3 years. And then I wanted to do something else. I did not want to continue to be an administrative assistant. And I figured, hey, an admin is a good way, because admins have to deal with all the different areas in a company. I don't
Absolutely.
Care how big your company is
God,
or whatever.
Admins make or break a team. I
yeah,
swear to God.
You gotta interact with a bunch of different people. So it gave me a really good opportunity to see other groups and to kind of get and make relationships with people in other groups and find out what other groups did. And so I did have that opportunity. So when I left the administrative role after 3 years, I moved into IT portfolio management. And that was the last transfer that I made that was voluntary.
That you chose.
That I chose with deliberation.
Yeah.
That I chose.
Yeah.
Because every time after that, it was because they were disbanding the department I was in. They were combining departments. They were doing, I don't know. They were sacrificing departments to the space pope. I don't know what it was, but they, in every other single transition, it was, here's the deal. This department's not going to exist anymore, but we're not trying to fire you. We're going to take everybody that's in your department and we will transfer you into some other department, but you are going to need to learn another skill set to be a part of that department. And so if I'd wanted to at any time, obviously I could have walked away. I could have been like, you know what? Process architecture. I don't even, you people have completely lost me. I'm out of here, right? Wendy Kaysen, I'm gone.
Yeah.
I'm done. Right?
Broken.
Yeah, done. But in reality, even though I started each of those with like, oh, for crying out loud, you know, like,
yeah. Man, it happened again. Like, that's
right.
Wearing. I mean, that's it wearing is. On a person.
It is. But at the time I was like, well, they didn't fire me. Like, if they had wanted to fire me, it would have been a perfect opportunity, because if you get rid of positions,
yep.
then you're just laying people off. You don't have to have, you know, a reason. And they obviously didn't want to fire me. So I was like, okay, I still have something to offer. And after I kind of talked myself off the cliff the first time it happened, I was all for it. I learned so much about different. I learned about portfolio management. I learned about doing communications for an entire department within an organization. I learned how to do process architecture. I learned to do business process management.
Mm-hmm.
I learned all of that stuff was taught to me and I learned it. and I didn't have to pay somebody to teach me. They paid me to learn.
Yeah.
And those skills I have used now. So I would have to say, you know, some of the other reasons why people obviously change is, like you said, involuntary.
Yeah.
You have no, but I think part of it too, and this might be because human beings are not future looking species necessarily. Mm-hmm. They don't really look at the long game. We're all very much focused on what's going on right now, which is probably a survival instinct. But honestly, one of the other reasons for changing your career would be picturing where you want to be in the future and doing something to get there.
Yes.
And whatever that is, like if your dream is to be a photographer, do photography, right? Then you go do, I mean, I've known two people who had careers there. I would call them careers. They were there for over a decade. And when they left, they went to left to do something completely different than what they had been doing. And one of them left to become a teacher, literally a high school science teacher or math teacher.
Yeah, I just had a friend. I mean, after 20 years with a large corporation, like she went and got her master's in social work because she, at that point, after a long career in corporate America, was like, I need to feel fulfilled. I need to feel like I have a purpose. I have to feel like I'm doing something for the greater good beyond providing a service or a product or whatever it is. Like, I need to go impact the community. And so after 20 years and probably what would have been a much longer career in this corporation, she was like, nope, I'm done. I'm going to go back to school. I want to be happy. And though every job has its frustrations, she's learned so much, but all those skills, to your point earlier, all the skills she learned have applied in some way to this new career.
Right.
You know, like it's like she'll go into an office and be like, my gosh, why are you running it this way? Because she has that where everybody else has been in the social field and not necessarily worried about business operations.
Right.
Things like that. So I think those things are the interesting part of making a big transition, whether it's to a completely different career field, or like in your case, in my case, to a different size company.
And I think a lot of it too, like, God bless millennials. I love all of you millennials. I really do. I know you guys get trash talked about you. And trust me, I have totally thrown some trash on that big pile on occasion. But my office, my current office right now is probably 75% millennial, right? And God bless them, because they look at jobs and careers completely different way than my generation does. I'm a Generation Xer, right? Which sounds really sexy and James Bond, but really it just means a bunch of old farts who got to the technology game late and don't know how to use Facebook. I mean,
yeah.
But honestly, I mean, millennials do not, whereas somebody from my generation might agonize for months or years even over changing a career, regardless of the reason. A millennial is more likely to be like, you know what? This bores me. I'm bored.
Oh, yeah.
This is boring.
Absolutely.
And just end this up and decide that they want to do something else and then make it happen. Mm-hmm. Whether that means going back to school or talking to somebody, you know, who's in the new field. And they'll do it and they are okay with that. They will shake it off. Whereas people from my generation are like, no, you can't take those years of experience from me. Well, because who am I then?
Exactly.
Take them away.
And I used to struggle. Like, I used to be like, what, man, like somebody's jumping around. But at the same time, too, with the development of technology and all these other things that are occurring, it feels like it's not as disruptive as it once was, right? When you used to talk about people who are job hoppers or whatever you wanted to reference them as, it felt like it would just completely disrupt the company so badly that it couldn't operate unless these people or these types of roles or whatever. And now things and people's skill sets are so broad, or the ability to learn because of technology and stuff has changed things so much. I feel like, you know, I still want people to have some level of commitment or loyalty to if they're progressing and they're happy or whatever. But I also feel like the detriment of losing somebody every 2 years, we've adapted as a corporations have adapted and stuff to that better than it used to, but I still struggle with that. I'm like, what do you mean? You're supposed to stay in there and be happy, unhappy for 5 years. Like the rest of us.
But that's the other thing too. I mean, I think part of it is the culture of company loyalty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's
has
changed.
Completely turned around.
There's
right?
very little of it.
There's very little of it, and there's no reason to have it really when you think about it. I mean, I know companies like to go on and on about being loyal and everything, but in the end, there is no loyalty. The only loyalty is you to the company. The company is under no you know, no contract to have any loyalty to you.
Yeah, they pay you for work. Right. You work, we pay you. If you don't, then and we don't.
You know, things like pensions are not things that you find. They don't exist anymore. Whereas, you know, back in my grandparents' day, you worked for a company for your entire year because when you couldn't work anymore, they paid you.
Yep.
And that whole concept obviously has fallen by the wayside. So now it's kind of turned more into, you know, again, the younger crowd, it's more about what they want to do and what they get meaning out of. And if that means that you go into one job when you get out of college and then you realize that's not what you, it wasn't what you thought it was going to be, screw it. I'll go do something else. Like, it's not a huge deal.
I think there's two things that occur when you can change a career, when you change a career. Like, you get in there and you realize you are more competent than you gave yourself credit for, or that your last employer may have given you credit for. And, or you go and you're completely learning something else, but you're still, you're energized differently because you're learning something else, where you lost that energy in your old career somehow, whether it was because the topic became boring or the way they did things became outdated, you name it. But I feel like the biggest realization that I had, maybe sounds weird, but it was like, man, I'm not a box of rocks. I actually know some things, and not every place is like where I just left. And so I have some, and then I realized it's not just about offering the skill set from a business lens. It's the coaching and the professional experience and the way to operate as a professional that you also have to bring to the table, because you think that everybody is just knows how you're supposed to behave or how you do certain things or approach different things. You just have these assumptions that you're going to walk into the same situation. And the refreshing thing is, it's never going to be the same situation. There's going to be something you can contribute. And that, I think that's fun.
So my experience was a little bit different, because what happened when, so I literally went from a corporate office of 5,000 people roughly, to a corporate office of 27 people. And that's not counting the three people who worked remotely and didn't even come into the office. So
bigger than the office I worked at.
Yeah, well,
the phantom employees.
Yes, exactly. So it was a huge, first of all, it was a huge professional culture shock.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing was, the new office that I went to, technology wise, was a good 10, 15 years ahead of my old company.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, they have cutting edge whatevers, right? I was just telling Wendy the other day, IT support came up and said, okay, well, we're going to do this, you know, you're going to answer your phone through, do you want me to hook it up so you can answer your phone through your computer? And I was like, what? And like, you know, that was a very entertaining 5-minute conversation where I just was trying to wrap my head around the fact that I could answer my computer. So they have very cutting edge technology stuff, but what they don't have was a very in-depth understanding of, for example, my newly learned skill, which was, you know, process architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually, when I started, they were in a situation where they were trying to put together process flows because they were trying to take them to clients. And most of our clients are wealth managers.
Yeah. So right? Large companies.
Right. Large companies. And they needed to see process flows for how, you know, how these money exchanges and how things were going to work. Right. Mm-hmm. And they had some, you know, some Visio, or not some Visios, they had some PowerPoint things with some squares and some arrows pointing at some things. And, you know, then there was like a big smudge in the middle that said things happen here. And then, you know, then you had an output, right? And, you know, it was like the South Park episode where, you know, things happen here and then underpants, right?
Yes.
The underpants gnomes. So it was literally that kind of situation. And I volunteered my expertise.
That's right.
In,
because you got it,
process management.
Yeah.
To assist them in documenting this type of thing. And so it, you know, it took a couple of sessions and we sat down and I hammered out some Visio things using standard BPM notation.
No.
Ooh.
Busted out.
And then I presented it back to them and you could have heard a pin drop. I mean, you could have heard a cricket fart in that room.
They were like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, that was the thing. Like, initially, I couldn't tell if they were like, what the hell is this crazy? Like, what is she doing? Or if they were just like, oh, my gosh, you know. And so finally, you know, the manager, he was like, He goes, this is so much better than what we had.
You're and like, then, I'm aware.
I know. And then, like, you know, I played it cool. I was like, well, you know, and, you know, inside my heart's beating again because I hadn't taken a breath in like 3 minutes.
Because you were afraid.
I was.
They were like, this is not.
And they started asking me a bunch of questions, and they were asking me about some of the notations and the symbols, like on the processes. And I was explaining, like, it's called BPM. It's standard process notation. Anybody who knows anything about BPM, when they look at this process flow, they're going to be able to read it. They're going to understand what those notations mean.
IT people will love you.
Right.
By the way.
And it was interesting because I guess they took my process flows, and then they went out to some clients over the next couple of months. And after a couple of months after that, one of the managers came and stopped by my cube unexpectedly, and he just said, he goes, I just want to let you know, those processes have made all the difference. He goes, when we walk in there and show these to these big companies now, they know that we're operating on a big company level too. We
yes.
understand this industry standard way of doing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was interesting because, you know, being a very small company is obviously very different. Like, we don't do meetings. Like, if you're going to call a meeting, it has got to be because there's just something.
The world is falling apart.
It does. The world is falling apart. They didn't restock the hard cider in the beer fridge. It's got to be like ground shaking, right? And it took me a little while to acclimate to that. And they had no interest in operating like a very large corporation,
company.
Right?
Yep.
Which, part of the way, I can't blame them. Large companies have their problems, right? It's red tape. It takes forever to get things done. But there's also reasons for that too. And, you know, as a small company, obviously small companies go through their growing pains and you figure it out. But it was kind of interesting because I kind of showed up with like this hypersensitized professional way things are done.
Yep.
And this little bitty office here was like, we ain't got time for that.
Exactly. Yeah, the nimbleness. And that's the thing. I think it's knowing how to apply things. You know, you come from a structure and you're like, oh, well, everybody should want to operate that way. And then you take a minute and you reassess it and go, wait, no, it wasn't great. It wasn't perfect. And
exactly.
They're not perfect. So we got to go somewhere in the middle.
So you mentioned the process thing real quick. I just want to mention this. So business process is one of those things that's really straightforward and easy to learn, but it's a game changer. If you can master it, it can really help a business. So I think part of what we're talking about is, you know, just the whole changing careers thing and help demystify a lot of that for our listeners. And I'd like to get into giving some advice on what people should do when they want to do that. But if you can add business process to your resume, and I'm not just saying write it on your resume, actually take some time to learn
actually
about
know
it.
What you're doing.
Here's the worst part. If you think you know something about business process, but you've never been trained on it,
you know
nothing about business process.
I thought I knew about it, and then Paul... I forget his name, took me aside and showed me some stuff, and I was like, wow, I'm an idiot.
I have friends who are very proud of their business process models, and it's garbage because they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So take 2 weeks to learn how to do that stuff, and it'll set you straight. When it comes to like changing careers, if somebody out there wants to do it, what would you guys recommend that they do first? Get up the courage to do it.
Tell your spouse right away.
Yeah, exactly. Do you need a reason to change careers, or is it okay just to decide you're going to do it?
So, I don't think so.
I don't think you need to. Somebody went through the transition of getting downsized and all that recently. Somebody gave me this great, what I thought was great advice, which was always be aware of your opportunities. If you like where you live, like if you like where you're working, literally the best thing you can do to solidify that that's the truth is always apply to a certain number of jobs every single year that look interesting. So you know what's out there, what opportunities you could be passing up, and that you are staying sharp on your interview skills or whatever, but that you're not foregoing a completely incredible opportunity just because you're like, well, I'm happy enough. Right. And I thought that was like, the best advice, because he was like, the thing at that point is, the ball's in your court, right? you can take it or you don't have to, but right. you should always be aware and you should always know that if you're like, what else is out there? Is there an interesting thing? Or this just looks, he's like, why not? Because you can always say no.
So Wendy, you remember about a year ago mm-hmm. when I was approached about applying for a position and it was basically my dream job.
Yes.
But I didn't go for it because I was happy where I was.
Yes.
I loved working for you and I felt that what I was going to be doing, even though it was a dream job, it was kind of a step back.
Mm-hmm.
In hindsight, I am kicking myself
that
for
you
not
didn't apply
doing that because I would have been, not that I'm not happy doing what I'm doing now. I actually really enjoy it.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of muscles I don't flex that I would have flexed in that job that would have helped add to job satisfaction.
And I think that you bring up a really important, you always have to feel some level of challenge. So the beauty of a big corporation is that you can move around to different organizations, similar to what Heather said, being an admin or being in certain roles, you kind of get a broad scope of what's going on in the entire company. And you can be like, oh, I think I want to go there. I want to go there. And you have more ability to grow within and learn different skill sets. But I also think a bit of advice is if you don't feel challenged, like if you don't get that twinge of anxiety a little bit in your current job, you're either just happy doing what you're doing and you don't want to be challenged and you're one of those people that enjoy it and you're going to stick with it. And we need people like that, right? If they love being then just stay doing that. But if you need to work muscles and be anxious and excited about something, then you probably need to change roles if you've lost that with your current role.
Well, I could probably give you a lot of advice about not talking to strange men in dark alleys. And making choices in general, like change in encompassing any type of change. I would say in terms of changing your career, make sure you do it for the right reason. I mean, if you're doing it because maybe you're going through a patch where you're bored at work, or every job, we all know that every job has certain aspects of it that nobody likes, right? But it's part of the job and you got to do it. If you're having maybe a period of time where it just seems like that's your whole job is the parts that you don't like and you're frustrated and you just went out and had 16 mojitos with your friend the other day who's just kicking butt in some glamorous, awesome job career and telling you that that's what you should have done. And that's when you decide to make change. Just make sure you're making your change for the right reasons and, research some stuff, understand what it is that you're going to be getting out of and what you're going to be getting into and just educate yourself on it, which I think people do, normally. But if you do have the choice to make a career change, just make sure you're doing it for the right reason.
Question. So, in looking for, I'll just say this, I never finished my degree. So, whenever it comes down to putting that on my resume.
I did not either.
Yeah. So, when looking for a role, do you even look at the minimum requirements? I honestly don't. I figure if I can get through to somebody that has.
Oh, I admire that because I am that person. Let me find the reason why they're going to say I'm not good enough.
But you know what? The whole concept of the job description and in fact, the entire job search process is so ridiculous and so non-standardized and so just open to interpretation by everybody that honestly, no matter whether you look at them or not, most people make their hiring decisions based 98% on their gut reaction to a candidate.
Absolutely.
Literally has nothing to do with their person's qualification. I could reel you off a list of names of people that I know were hired that did not have the qualifications. They mm-hmm. didn't meet those qualifications. If an audit was ever done, those people would get fired because they don't meet the minimum requirement. But what they did have is they were personable. They were, whoever interviewed them, who was making the hiring decision, liked them. And that has caused so much heartache and so many thoughts of complete and utter annihilation of somebody else's car with a 2x4 that I could not even begin to express. But that's just how people work, right? That's just how people work. And so it's really crappy, but a lot of the stuff, the minimum requirements, all that stuff, it depends on who's doing the hiring. It could mean that person could be very stringent about it. And yes, you must meet all those requirements. Or the person doing it could not even know what those requirements are and could care less.
I think when we hired, we as a group hired collectively when we brought a new team member on. And we did look at the job description, but the way we interviewed somebody was, you're right, Heather, it was a lot of gut. It was, do they fit the team? There were much more higher demand for other reasons to hire them than it was about the paper, what was on the paper. Did they fit the team? Could they learn? Could they communicate well? It's just stuff that wasn't on the paper that we're like, yep, and if they can't, we can teach them. They have, right. They show the aptitude to learn, right? And I think that most people, unless it's a very niche thing, like, right, if you're a brain surgeon, I'm going to pretty much make sure you've done all the neurological certifications and things before you touch my brain. But in most cases, there are other criteria outside of the written that you as a leader or you as a team are looking for in a person when you bring them on.
Agreed, but I would have to actually counter argue that by saying
yes.
That while a ton of people are be like, oh yeah, this person can bring them on, they can learn, they seem like they have an aptitude, they have a desire to learn, and we'll teach them as we go. Great, don't have a problem with that at all. The problem I have is that never happens. I have never worked in a place where there has been any type of comprehensive training program for anybody to come in to plug whatever gaps they have in the knowledge that they just didn't have when you interviewed them. And it's very rare to actually come across an organization that does circle back around and takes the time to go to a new person and be like, here's your gaps. Here's what we need to train you on. Partner you with somebody who can train you and show you. And sometimes, yeah, you're going to get people, they pick it up. They're good. They can observe. They understand and they know to look and to pay attention. And then the other 99% are complete. It just never happens. It never comes back around.
That's a good point. It's rare.
This raises the question. Somebody wants to go in, do and change careers. A lot. We know that a lot of people we've met before fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Is that a reasonable strategy, or should you actually go in, I pre-identify what your opportunities are and then have a plan to get to where you need to be? Or should you fake it till you make it?
I think it really depends on the type of person you are. And this is where self-honesty is extremely important.
And self-awareness is critical.
Very critical, because some people can do that. Some people can do it. They're extremely observant. They can pick up things very quickly. They can deduct from stuff that they see, and they can reverse engineer, if you will, the stuff that needs to happen. And they just absorb it and they can pick it up. Other people, and we all know these people, they've been in the same job for 10 years, and you'll be in the same job as them for 6 months, and you'll know things that they don't.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so I really honestly think whether or not it's valid to fake it till you make it, I think the answer to that is variable, because it just comes down to being extremely honest with yourself. If you think you can do it, then maybe you can, but you need to know yourself.
And what about risks as well? Like, is there a risk if you go into a position and you don't know what you're doing?
So we had an amazing speaker, Kat Cole, which people know all over the business world. She's
like
an amazing
cats.
Person.
Yeah.
Well, I know you like cats, but this is an actual lady named Kat. And she has this great saying, right? And it's not just the female versus male thing. It's the if you wait to be 100% ready to have to go after an opportunity, it's too late. It's you need to have a comfortable level of experience to say that you can do it, and then back the rest up with what she calls hustle muscle, meaning you're willing to put in the time, the effort, ask the questions, get out of your own way, and admit what you don't know, or, you know, validate assumptions or whatever it is, to then be 100% within a reasonable amount of time. But you know, the truth of it is, if anybody said they were always 100% ready to take on a job, unless it was the exact same job they were doing before, would, to me, be lying. There's some component of that job that's different than what they
deluding yourself.
Or deluding yourself.
There's people who genuinely believe that stuff.
Yes, yeah, that is true. I am one of those people, I'll fake it till I make it, but I'll say I don't know. Like, it's not faking it, really, because I'm completely honest and I can't lie. And I'm going to be like, I'm going to ask a million questions and annoy you, but I'm doing it so that I don't risk the company. I don't risk the team. I don't risk anything, because I think I'm, I have to put on this persona. No, I'm here because of one set of skills while I learn another.
And I think, too, Is it okay to fake it until you make it, or do you think there's risks or consequences to that? I'll be honest with you, I'll be the Debbie Downer on here. There are no consequences to it, because I will say this right now. the people who should be terminated, and I don't mean that in like they're terrible people, because I don't believe that. If you have ever been fired from a job, whether it was for just cause or non-just cause, right, it does not mean that you are a terrible person, mm-hmm. right? I have worked, I would have to go and say with some authority that the majority of people that I have worked with should not have had that job. Mm-hmm. And it's for a whole host of reasons, starting with not having qualifications and moving on to all sorts of other, you know, crazy stuff. But the honest truth is that human beings, the way we think, you go through the process of hiring someone, right? And it takes some effort. You got to look through resumes. You got to, you know, bring people in. You got to vet them out. You got to talk to them. You got to go back and forth with some offer. You got to bring them in. You got to onboard. I mean, it is a time investment, mm-hmm. and a money investment, right? And you go through all of that and you get the person in, and 6 months later, deep down in your heart of hearts, where you know that the fact that, you know, you listen to Kenny G CDs in the bathtub while drinking grape Kool-Aid, and you will never tell anybody about this, but you know in that same part of your heart that that person should not be in that job.
Yeah.
But what does the average person do? They don't fire them.
No.
They don't get rid of them. They're just like, you know what? There's a warm body there. They're doing something. They're maybe not doing everything that I need them to do, but they're doing something. And you know what? If I let that guy go, I got to go through the whole process again. Oh my God, I don't have time. I don't want to do it. Human beings, we avoid pain at all costs. And that's any kind of pain, mental, physical, whatever it is. And that is a mental pain. And we will avoid it. Because unless somebody is coming into your office like 600 times a day and like that dude you just hired, my God, what the hell?
Yeah.
Unless you reach that, I guess, mass criticality there, they don't. And, you know, I remember one of the SVPs, one thing she did say that I will always remember is that she was given a talk once at one of the quarterly meetings. And she said, when anybody ever asks me what my biggest regrets are, it is always the same regret, and it is that I do not terminate the people who need to be terminated when they need to be terminated. I wait too long. And she admitted that.
Yeah.
And in terms of risks or consequences, I will answer you honestly, even though it's a downer answer, but the answer is there are none.
Well, I don't disagree with things that you've said, and I do think that there a lot of the things you've expressed are the reasons we don't address those issues sooner rather than later are absolutely accurate. And I do think there is that point of also, so on the flip side, right, as a leader, what did you do to even prevent it? Like,
oh, yeah, definitely.
That's the thing. I think that if there's a way to salvage that person, or if there's a way to help them or turn them around or get them to a different group, right, and that takes energy and that takes time, and depending on what the role is, it can be hard.
Oh yeah.
But I think that's something as a leader, I would want to make sure I've walked myself through very thoroughly before I say it's just easy to fire them too. But that's a hard. What is time and what is the criticality to your point? I think at the end of all of this, it is come down to that we are all human beings, and the things that make it hard to make decisions about leaving a career, you know, I had some great leaders who encouraged me to move on before I thought I was ready, but I also had some that were like, that's probably not the good fit. And so regardless of what your role is or what you're trying to do, I think it's important to self-assess, but also go to people you really trust to be very honest with you and be mature enough to take the feedback that they have your best interest in mind. Because you will know who those people are, or if they're just somebody who's like, yeah, you should just do it because, you know, you need to move on before it's too late, or some other hodgepodge reason why. Really, in your heart, have a deep conversation with somebody that you trust about your career, has been in your shoes or something else before you make the jump. To Heather's point earlier, do your research, do some deep thinking about what it is that, why it's interesting, why it's not, how long you think you want to be in that role. Like, put that forward thinking on, like you're saying, being more futuristic versus in the moment, whether it's for a salary or if it's for a title or whatever it is. But no, you've got to live in that decision for a long time. So have people that you trust giving you feedback about that.
So
too.
Let's summarize or do like a checklist here.
Okay.
So you think that you may want to change careers, change companies, change jobs, whatever. first assess, you know, are you satisfied with where you're at? Is this what you want to do for the rest of your life? If the answer is no, then proceed.
Exactly.
It's like a decision point.
Explore. Yeah.
Explore. So look at the positions available. I, like I said, I don't look at the minimum requirements because I can figure out a way around those typically if I need to.
Wise.
Yes. Well, so
dressing up as Batman to go to an interview does not count.
Yeah.
It doesn't?
As getting around the minimum
or
requirements.
Or Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom. Yeah. Yep. I did that. So, okay. So, but look to see what's out there. Think about things that are relatable to what you know. If you don't have, when I say the minimum requirements, you need to have probably have some experience unless it's an entry-level position.
Correct.
Even if it's something that's relatable. Like business process, which Heather and I both did, and Wendy led the team, that's relatable to a lot of things. You can relate that to software development because it's important to know what people do before you digitize software for them to do it in.
Yeah. Oh, Brian, that's just crazy talk.
Or just so that they work better with other people, not even the technology piece. Like, this is my boundary, not yours. Like, expect this from me and I can hold you accountable and vice versa. Like, novel.
So, what about salary requirements? Do you need to know that going in?
Oh, always.
I think that's a common thing unless money's not an option, a concern for you.
How do you find that out? Like, Glassdoor?
That's a good
tons. There are tons of resources, actually. Glassdoor is good. A lot of companies have ranges that are actually public. I mean, in the ranges, when I say range, I mean like 50 to 80,000 range. Yeah. So you could be anywhere in that range, right? Yeah. talk to people. Ask people on LinkedIn sometimes will help. This is going to sound kind of shady, but I mean it with all due respect. Find somebody that worked at the company that you want to work for and doesn't work there anymore, and then asking them what they made.
Hey, there you go.
I mean,
Indeed does a good job with reviews too on companies. Yes, is another option. Yes. But I would say too, if you're going to research the salary, like don't try to just find that same exact job description or title. Mm-hmm. Look at variations of it. Maybe look for four different types that could be the same role, and then look at the salaries and look at the descriptions across that, and come up with your number in your head.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because job descriptions are typically written to get a pay rating.
Correct.
So the job description may have honestly very little to do with what you're doing.
Correct.
So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, if you think you're looking for a role that's more diverse and not one typical thing, they probably write it to one, but no, they may be asking for other skill sets or vice versa. Yeah, the best way you can do is like pick four types of jobs that you want to try to do or you think they may be actually asking for, and then look at the salaries associated with that and the skill sets needed for that and everything else, instead of just pinpointing that one thing again, unless you're like a doctor or dentist or, you know, things like that.
So as far as your resume goes, you should probably have somebody look at that and give you an objective opinion.
No.
I know.
Dude, just wing it. Crayons, whatever.
So here's one thing I always recommend as far as doing a resume. Write your resume for the position. What I do is I will actually take the job description, copy and paste it into like a word cloud generator, and the words in the word cloud that are biggest, I make sure those are featured in my resume.
Mm-hmm.
Because the company you're applying to may have software, they may not, but either way, they're looking for keywords.
Yes.
So that's an easy, quick tip. If you feel that your resume still isn't great, I guess there are resume services out there. I just don't know how valuable they are.
I would recommend going to www.testresume.com. Mm. They allow you to upload your resume and into their application. And what it actually does, it does not actually help you with the stuff in your resume. But what it does is, since most companies use applications where you load your resume online, what those applications actually do is, when your resume goes into that, the very first thing that these applications do is they strip all the formatting out of it. And so while you sat there for 12 hours lining up your bullets and making your fancy headlines and you know, aligning everything just so, what those applications do is they strip the formatting, they push it through their system, they parse the information out, And then the system actually recompiles your resume and spits it out to a recruiter. When a recruiter gets it, it looks like a text file. And I've seen this happen, and I know this happens because my husband actually worked for a company that handled resume job application systems.
I actually have them bookmarked here on my computer.
Yeah, so test resume is actually kind of cool because what it'll do is it will you can upload your because I'm Generation X and I don't know anything about technology.
Hey, yeah,
you can insert your resume into that slot in your computer. Anyways, you can upload your resume into this application, and what it does is it actually puts it through an application system, an automated application system, and then it will show you what it's going to look like by the time it reaches the recruiter. And what's nice about that is it actually shows you where you're, like, has anybody has ever read a resume where, like, there's a half a bullet point on one page, and then all of a sudden the second half of the bullet point's on the second page and weird stuff like that? It'll show you that. And you can actually adjust the formatting on your resume. So my advice...
That's awesome.
Yeah. It lets you upload 2 free resumes within a 24-hour period. If you try to do more than that, I think it tries to charge you, so you get 2 shots every 24 hours. But...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but... yeah, guys, I'm just going to tell you guys, don't get fancy with your formatting. Make it clear. Make it readable. Do not jam anything into one ginormous paragraph, which, yes, I have seen on a resume. You know, bullet points are fine, but you don't have to get fancy schmancy. You really don't, because in the end, it's stripping all of that out anyways. So yeah. just a little professional knowledge gleaned from my many years of experience.
That's what we're here for.
I'm pulling mine up. My resume doesn't look too far off there are bullets, but it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I think you could probably get that through an application system and they'd pull out the important stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff. You know.
Okay, so you have your resume. You have you've applied. When you go for the interview, wear nice clothes. Yeah. Bathe.
Look like you care about having a career, job, whatever you want to label it.
By the way, you're
a capable person.
If you're going to an interview within the same company you already work for,
Still do that.
Treat it like you would treat any other interview. Mm-hmm. I cannot stress this enough. Do not be like, oh, these people know me. I work here. It's cool. I can wear my Bermuda shorts because everybody's doing it. It's Bermuda Short Friday, right? No.
Wrong.
I don't care if people make fun of you. I don't care if somebody gives you a wet willy in the bathroom. I don't care. You dress as if you were going out to go interview with a different company. Treat it that way.
What's the line? Dress for the job you want, not the job you have.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, and anybody who wants to give you any crap about how people shouldn't judge you by the way you dress, tell them, first of all, they don't know how people.
Yes.
People totally will judge you about the way you dress. And you don't dress to impress. You dress to make an impression. And if the impression is you live in your mom's basement and you haven't done laundry for 3 days and you've been sleeping on a couch with a raccoon, then by all means, wear your nasty jeans and whatever, because that is the impression that you will make, right? So just remember that. Okay.
On our first episode, I actually think I said that I bought my first suit ever.
You did?
Yeah. So I, for a position I interviewed for, didn't get the job, but I have a suit now.
See?
So if I wanted to apply for something else, I totally could.
See? You're set. It really is. It's important because, again, you want to dress the way you want people to perceive you a certain way. If it's responsible and put together and, you know, I'm capable of having some discipline, then look at that.
It's respect. It's respect for yourself and the people who are interviewing you.
Correct.
That's all it really boils down to.
That's perfect. Yes.
So
excellent.
When you go in the interview, and I say this, I have interviewed hundreds of people at the very least over the course of 12 years. You definitely need to be likable. If the people that you're interviewing with don't like you, they will not want to work with you. And if they don't want to work with you, they're not going to hire you. Being likable is, I think, the most important thing.
And I think the most important thing with being likable, first and foremost, is being genuine to who you are.
Yes.
Like, don't put on the cheesemo. Like, be genuine. You're likable the way you are, but that means being your authentic self and then being that person and engaging in the conversation in a way that makes you likable, not just talking about the boring thing that's on your resume or whatever it is. Like, you know, Brian, you always talk about when we you know, interviewed. And
my
interview
was terrible.
You were just like, I don't know, I can't read if she, what. And what I was looking for was somebody who was obviously a fast learner, who cared and knew a lot about the company, all these things. And just because you didn't have this like outrageously outgoing personality or, you know, really trying to sell me on yourself, I knew that was genuinely you. You answered my questions. You engaged with me when I asked you something, you know, more. You asked questions back. That was the likable part.
You probably thought I was going to be boring as hell. And I was for a long time.
No, I thought, honestly, you want to know what I thought?
Yeah.
I thought you were looking at me like, this woman is dumber than a box of rocks.
No, I didn't think that at all.
I was truth like, this guy's so smart, and he's just like, oh God, she's boring.
No, let's I didn't. That was
my
this.
God, she's still talking.
So, but yeah, like, but be likable. So yeah. I had gone probably 2 or 3 years not interviewing myself, because, I mean,
One interview oneself?
No, I mean, so like, I had had I think one interview.
Gotcha.
In the last 5 years before you interviewed me.
Uh-huh.
But I'd only had a few opportunities to interview other people.
Mm-hmm.
But in like two roles prior to that, I interviewed all the time.
Yeah.
And I think after being in this last role on your team and having to do quite a few interviews, you know,
with other people,
a few dozen, I think I am a better interviewee now, that because now I know more. I think also it comes down to like the different levels of roles that you interview people for.
Yes.
Like, so I used to interview people for very entry level positions.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, you know, are you competent? You know, can, I mean, do you use full sentences? Can you type? probably from the position when I was like an analyst and a senior analyst, and I had to, you know, when I was involved in the team's decisions, I had to think, you know, how much of the crap am I going to have to cover if you screw it up?
Yeah. And I think you hit on something really important. If you ever have an opportunity to sit in and be a part of interviews,
it's the best thing.
Prior to being a leader who actually runs and is responsible for it, it is the best thing you're going to do, because it's not just about being a part of that decision making and learning. It's about seeing what, you know, what good looks like, what bad looks like, what you want to do, what you don't want to do next time you interview. It really does. That's probably the most helpful way to be prepared for an interview, besides having somebody who's really good at mock interviews.
Like, well, if I can, because I'm pretty sure the only reason you guys invited me here is to be argumentative.
yes.
But to flip it a little bit, the perspective, I'm a terrible interviewee.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm pretty sure that while my mouth is saying the right things, my face is looking like something else. Because I am not good. I'm not going to say I'm not good at lying, because I'm a fantastic liar when I need to be.
Poker
right?
face. You don't have good poker face.
But I don't. I have a very difficult time saying something that I believe is completely opposite of what I'm really thinking, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, anyway, I could offer you a bunch of examples, but we won't. But to flip it a little bit, as far as being likable, I think if you're the interviewer, and I would make this plea to all people who interview other people for jobs, please be aware of things like social anxiety. Social anxiety
Absolutely.
Is extremely prevalent. And I don't think a lot of people know that it is, because unfortunately, people with social anxiety come across as being the snob or that jerk or that stuck up person who never talks to anybody else, and they never go out after work and hang out with the group at the bar or whatever it is, right? And I'm not saying there aren't people who are like that, because there definitely are, but just be aware of the fact that the person who's sitting across from you may really struggle with actually they're very nervous, right? And sometimes they're going to come across as a bit odd, and you're going to be like, what was that all about?
But odds the new normal, though.
It is, but so what I go is, you definitely do need to be likable, right? Nobody's going to hire you to work in a group or team of people if you're going to be that guy that nobody can ever talk to. But I would also say that one of the important things is that, and you know, I think Wendy, I think you were with our group when we did, the situational awareness training?
Yep.
One of the big things that they said in that training that really stuck out to me was that when you're interviewing somebody for a job and you say, hey, have you ever, you know, have you ever made pinatas for a living? And the person goes, you know, I've never made piñatas, but I've actually made, you know, I actually worked in a factory where they made teddy bears. So that's kind of the same thing. So I think I could do this job. And the person who's interviewing is like, yeah, you know what? That is kind of the same thing. I mean, you're constructing something, you're putting something in something, you know, da, da, da. What they taught us in that training was that is literally wrong. You should never do that. When you're interviewing for a position, it's, have you ever done X? And if the answer is anything other than yes, you do not hire the person for that position. Now, that kind of is on the other end of the fulcrum from, hey, this person has an eagerness to learn, and that's really what I'm interested in, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you got to kind of, there's such a balancing act, and there's so many variables that go into deciding whether or not somebody, you should hire somebody, right? And they're like infinite variables, and it really comes down to what you want and how this person presents itself. But the other part that I struggle with too is this: you're getting what? Maybe if it's a lengthy interview, you're getting an hour of time with this person, and you are going to determine what their future potential is based on an hour within, by the way, a very professional and structured context.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that's critical if you're going to be interviewing people is if you want to get the best genuine person, you've got to make it comfortable. So
absolutely.
Heather brings up a very good point. There's people with, you know, whether it's social anxiety or it's jitters or if it's speak, whatever it is, you don't have to be the staunch crazy, I'm the boss, whatever mentality you're coming in with, right? You need to, because not only is it about making them comfortable and getting the best out of them during the interview for you to make a decision, what it also is a representation of that company, because if they don't see that as a great interview with the person that could potentially be hiring them, they may not want the job.
Yeah.
And they were the best candidate. But I found whenever we interviewed, the most beneficial thing was making the environment that person was walking into and starting off with just not a deep personal conversation, but not just jumping into all the stuff about the business. And when you're busy, it gets that way, but just give them a minute to breathe. Yeah. Give them an opportunity to be like, we're people in a room having a conversation.
I love your guys' points, because these are all the complicated things that have to go into the interview process.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're sitting down across from the person who's interviewing you, there's all these things in mind. All the stuff that we just talked about, they got to think about.
Yes.
They have to think about their HR policies.
Yes.
They have to think about the fact that they're going to have to live with whoever they hire, basically. Yes. They have to think, oh, God, do I hire somebody that I like, or do I hire somebody that has the right skill set? So I guess my strategy would be going in, be likable.
No.
Be somebody that they want to work with, and also show that you can do what you do. If you are somebody who has social anxiety, I was the world's worst interviewee. Show that you're competent. Show how everything connects. Don't focus on being likable. Because, if somebody says, what are some of your hobbies? And you say, I like mutilating animals and, wearing their blood.
Ah, wow.
Don't say that. Just say,
I got a position for you in IT.
Say, I'm really a boring person. I don't have many hobbies, you have to go into the strategy. If you're not a fun person, focus on competency. But if you are somebody who can carry on a reasonably decent conversation, make sure they like you first, and then make sure they understand you're competent.
And I think be prepared to ask the questions that are important to you. That it's easy to just say, I have no questions, right?
Oh, don't ever say that.
Dude. Yeah. Have a question. No question is a bad question. And even if you think they may have covered it in their quick little spiel about the job or whatever, ask it again. I'd rather you ask something than to make an assumption about it, but always have questions and make sure they're not just the cookie cutter ones you pull. It's actually questions that matter to you about making a decision about the job, because again, you're in there and they're making a decision about you, but you're choosing to be in there because it's a decision for yourself. So make sure you are coming up with questions that are important to you and part of the decision-making process.
Yeah, and for God's sakes, whatever you do, do not ask how much vacation time you get, and do not ask how often you can work from home, because those things will be covered in the policy, and when you ask those questions, it makes it sound like that's the only thing you care about.
So,
how often can I be out of this job, and do I ever have to come into the office?
So, I love that because that also reminds me that there are questions that the interviewer cannot ask you legally.
Correct.
So go in. We can't recount them all, but like, hey, how old are you?
Yep.
What's your religion?
Do you have kids?
Do you have kids?
Yeah.
If they ask that,
are you married?
Yes. Or imply those things, you have to make the decision whether or not how are you going to respond.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing that I would ask myself is if crap like that came up, do I want to work at that company?
Mm-hmm. And also understanding that no answer is an answer.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would, you know, one of the things I would also kind of recommend is that if you are looking to transfer careers to something else, try to find a mentor that is a person who already works in the field that you want to go into, if you can. And for that, I would recommend using areas like LinkedIn, where you can, and I know there's pros and cons to LinkedIn, and I know some people who absolutely hate it and think it's turned into more of Facebook than anything else. But if you search for people, if you want to become if you're a nurse right now and you want to become a photographer, search LinkedIn or even find a photographer's, you know, webpage that you really like. Send them a message. It doesn't have to be lengthy. All it can be is like, hey, here's the situation. I've been thinking about doing this. I really want to change, you know, my career, but I really want to understand what this career entails. Would you be willing to just, you know, exchange some messages with me? You know, depending on, you know, if they live near you, maybe you can meet for a drink or something, or, you know, and, you know, obviously it's not a date, so you need to make it sound like a date, but ask somebody if they would be willing to mentor you. And even if that just means that maybe once every couple of weeks or something, you guys have a conversation, or you send them questions via email and they respond back to whatever that is, whatever the communication channel it is. I cannot stress enough the benefit of having a mentor who is working in the field that you want to get into.
And more people, unless somebody is completely overwhelmed, I would think that most people would want to mentor other people.
Yes.
Because it's a good learning opportunity for them.
Yes.
And it helps build up their confidence.
But what I would say, in picking a mentor, make sure it's either somebody in the industry, but make sure it's somebody who challenges you, not just...
Oh, mentoring is its own skill set.
Exactly. Like, make sure it's somebody who's not just telling you what you want to hear or giving you, like, this fast route of how they got there, and so it's just going to work for you. Make sure that they're challenging you and holding you accountable to being better. Otherwise, you probably want to find a different mentor.
So I'm going to sound terrible recommending this, and I feel terrible saying it, but go back and listen to episode 8 of How Was Your Weekend? Becoming Rejection Proof.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because absolutely.
I think that the book that we talked about, Rejection Proof, and how we talked through it, what we talked through it about, it really helped me. Like, just the description of what the author went through,
yes,
completely changed my perspective on how I respond to rejection.
Yes.
And this is one of those things, you have to be willing to be rejected.
Yep.
So I think that's important.
I agree completely.
What else should people be mindful of when they want to change jobs or careers?
It's almost that the stuff you have to be mindful of is the stuff that you have to be mindful of when you're making a change of anything. It's not necessarily specific to careers, I think.
Agree.
Because just again, like we talked about earlier, it's becoming easier and more normal for people to change careers fairly easily. Mm-hmm. Not easily, but on a regular basis if they so desire. So it's almost just, again, make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. Think about what you want. Make sure that where you want to move into is going to give you what you want. You know, and you know, you need to think too, like, some things that you want to change careers in, you might need to go back to school, right? Mm-hmm. And factor that into, you know, okay, what does that mean money-wise? Am I going to have to work and go, you know, whatever your situation is, just make sure that you plan it out a little bit. And I'm a planner, so I plan all the things, but and I know most people aren't, but try to think ahead in terms of how, what's going to happen when you go to learn your new career, so to speak, and think about that. Plan it out a little bit. Understand what's going to happen. And, you know, I think most people who want to change careers, they've probably have researched what it is they want to do, or they might already be doing side work in it, mm-hmm. you know, volunteering or whatever, because they are already interested in that career.
You would think so, but honestly, I bet a lot of people are just floundering in what they're doing, and they want to change careers, and they just, haven't gotten the confidence to actually do it yet, because it's easy to fall into a rut and just stick in it.
Oh, very oh, much yeah. so. I mean, I'm guilty of it.
I so am too.
I think the thing of it is Heather's advice is very good in the fact that think about the outcome. Why are you doing it? Why is it important? And what do you want the outcome to be? Do you really want this job? Then, like anything else, you have to put the effort in. And you don't have to be the smartest person on the topic or anything else, but show that you have genuine interest and that you've put some type of effort into the decision of going to make this change versus, I just want to change, so I'm just throwing some horseshoes around and hoping one hits the pole, you know?
So I do want to mention one thing. I know we're running long, but I want to say this. You said something about being the smartest person on the topic.
I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. It's too much pressure.
Being smart is not enough.
No, it's
not.
And
I have interviewed so many people who just felt, well, I'm smart, I deserve this job. No, you don't.
No.
there comes a point, and it doesn't take long, where being smart and also being smart's not enough. You have to be savvy. You have to be able to understand, you know, how to interact with people. You have to be willing to put in effort. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe for the first 15 minutes, being smart is going to give you an advantage.
Yep.
But if you can be smart and be proactive
and
hard
get
working
stuff
and all
done.
That,
yep.
that's where the value of being smart is.
If just you can get people to work with you, you are already halfway past the battle.
Yeah. Most people don't want to work with somebody who thinks they're the smartest person in the room. No, I don't.
It's not really fun.
Well, yeah. Smart, honestly, smart is such an arbitrary term.
Exactly.
It could mean 100 million. It could mean...
Everybody's
the guy just recited pi to 1600 decibels or decibels. Good Lord. Decimals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, we know I'm not the smartest person in the room. But yes, it has such a wide connotation for what it could possibly
mean. Exactly.
So,
right.
So, yeah, you're, and, you know, as it is, people skills are going to blow away any other kind of technical knowledge about 80% of the time.
Easily.
So it's, you know, again, because that's how people.
That's how people. We're coining this. Can we coin this?
I will have a bumper sticker sent to you tomorrow.
Yes.
Pretty awesome.
People.
So I think we probably should take next week off since you're going to be working Wendy.
Okay.
So we have a nice long episode here.
Yeah.
I think that this can tide some people over.
Okay.
Maybe we can make some recommendations of other things to listen to.
Okay.
We'll figure it out between now and the next show.
Sounds good.
But
Plus, I got a question for you. I'm kind of going off script here a little bit.
Okay.
But by the time we get together again-ish, we'll be close. How's the challenges coming? I don't want all the details, but how are the challenges coming, buddy?
So the challenge that you gave me.
Yes.
Was to put my phone down.
Yes.
And try to, I guess, relax.
Yep, just be still.
I'm taking more naps now.
Yes! Naps are, you know what, some of the most powerful leaders in the world take naps.
So, I mean, it's
you're on your way, Kill.
It's one of those things, like...
you and Pinky in the
be
brain.
Be still, absolute zero. You know, it's all relative.
I tend to work late and focus on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm really still and I'm not looking at my phone or something, I'm going to fall asleep.
Yeah. Your neurons are not firing.
I've only listened to one of the podcasts so far that you recommended.
Yeah,
how about you?
I've probably struggled with the 30 minutes away from my phone thing more in the last week than you probably did. But that's been pretty easy for me. But the podcast, that one, man, I'm still struggling through. The Destroyer one. I'm going to finish
it. Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Yes. But the other one was entertaining.
Things like hours long.
It is 6 hours. And the guy's voice, no disrespect, is so monotone. I'm like, come on, can I get a laugh?
I love that podcast.
He says really intriguing things that make you think, but I'm like, God darn it, I'm going to fall asleep. This might be my 30 minutes of mind numbing stillness. So that one I'm struggling through, but I am bound and determined to get through it. But the other one was very entertaining. I enjoyed it. So now I'm trying to think of some other ones to do something off the wall.
So Heather, thank you for being here.
Yes.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me.
You'll have to join us again.
Yeah, so
I loved this. This was awesome.
I was going to mention
I'm going to be a radio announcer in my next job.
Yes.
That would be awesome.
Even though I have a face for silent movies or voice for silent movies.
And even though I'm certain radio is a gigantic pay cut. It really is. So we were actually going to record another show. We talked for a long time before we got started, and we were running a little long. So, well, let's still plan on hitting up that next topic that we were going to hit up.
Yeah.
And so here in a couple of weeks, if you don't mind coming back, we can hit that topic and we can have you on the next show.
My birthday just came early. I will totally be here.
Awesome. That'd be great. Sweet.
Awesome. Well, we'll be happy to have you back.
That'll be wonderful. So make sure you check out the podcast. Go to our website. We were having some issues with the domain. Did I fix it?
Oh, you
Still got that job in IT for you.
Yeah.
The good thing is he knows how to edit.
Yeah. So
isn't it howe.as/?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the URL's not working right now, but I'll fix it.
Facebook still works.
Facebook still works. Facebook.com/
Twitter
Weekend Podcast.
Yes, that is it.
I like how he said that as a question.
He did that to me, and I could actually answer it correctly.
Yes, it is. So
it is amazing because that's generally not my deal.
Yeah. So Facebook.com/ Weekend Podcast. I will get the domain fixed. I'm having some issues with it's basically our SSL certificate, so I'll fix that.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. So we're going to take next week off, but we'll be back the week after next. So thank you guys for listening. And again, Heather, thank you so much for being here. This was awesome. I really enjoyed it.
Totally enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Have a great week.
We'll see you guys later.
This was How Was Your Weekend with Wendy and Brian. Please subscribe at our website, howwas/yourweekend. That's howw.as/yourweekend. Please leave a review and tell a friend.